Hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 1 of Slam Hammer, an Australian Warhammer 40k and Kill Team podcast. My name is Will of Crossblade Studios. I'll be your host as we slide through Season 1, hopefully without too many crutch words or awkward silences, touching on a number of different topics relating to 40k and Kill Team, from a lists and strategy and new developments perspective. When it comes to all things modeling, we'll do that through the guise of my conversion studio, Crossblade Studios. If you want to keep across all the work that I'm doing with Crossblade Studios and be able to match that up with the conversation in the course of the podcast, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Crossblade Studios, and there can be a bit of a continuous conversation about all things hobbying in there too. In Season 1, while I'll be talking a lot about Death Watch because it is the most native to me, we'll also talk about a lot of the other projects which I'm working on, which includes the Angels of Redemption as an Astartes faction, and also the Astra Militarum. And as the season progresses, we'll likely touch on some non-Imperial factions and to kind of weigh up and differentiate how they go in Kill Team, again, from a hobbying and a rules perspective, just to gain a bit of variety in there too. And if you do want to keep across the podcast as the season develops, you can find us in a number of ways. Anchor.fm is our native host, and you can find us there at Slamhammer. But you can also find us anywhere where good podcasts are found, and that includes Spotify and Apple Podcasts. There are some other streaming services that you can find us on, and you can find that on our anchor.fm profile. And in the meantime, if you have any feedback on how the season is going, or if you have any suggestions as to how content can be tweaked, or even if you just genuinely want to say hi and let me know what you're doing, be sure to get in touch with us at Crossblade Studios. There is a voice messaging link on the anchor.fm profile where you can leave a voice message directly and feature in the podcast. But if you don't feel like doing that, you can send us a message or an email at crossbladestudios@gmail.com or on Instagram via the direct messaging feature. And without any further ado, we'll skip to Season 1, Episode 1, Part 1, Why the Death Watch. Welcome back. We now skip to the Death Watch, the Auto Xenos Chamber Militant. And the reason why we're starting off with the Death Watch is because, being the faction I play, and given this is a new podcast, it seems like the easiest place that we could possibly start. I'm sure everybody can agree. So why the Death Watch? I've always really loved Space Marines, I think, since I started out in the hobby in the year 2001. Marines has kind of been my thing. The first Space Marines I ever laid my hands on from a purchase and hobby perspective were the Tactical Marines in the third edition starter set. I believe it was the one, or the fourth edition it might have been. It was Black Templars. It came with a tactical squad and a land speeder, and you faced off against the Dark Eldar. And that was a really good kit for what it was, and I think back then that was a great transition into the hobby. And at that point, I started painting Ultramarines. And Ultramarines, I think, was just a pure fluke. Maybe I'd looked at the back of some Space Marine boxes or something like that back in the day, and that seemed like the most rational place to start. Despite everybody's love-hate relationship with the Ultramarines, that seemed to be the best place to start at that time. And had the Ultramarines for quite a few years, starting off with just that tactical squad and land speeder, and moving on gradually to amass some 3,000 points of Ultramarines, including Daddy Kalgar, as he was back then, the old pup Smurf, before Rabute Gilliman came along. And, yeah, they included things like Land Raiders and Terminators and all that sort of cool stuff. One thing which really jumped out at me at the time, and I really liked at the time, despite never collecting them, was the Ultramarines Tyranid War Veterans, led by Chaplain Cassius. Back then, unless I am mistaken, and if I am wrong, by all means, do let me know. I don't believe a Death Watch existed, either in the lore or in the hobbying range. So back then, it was very much a Ultramarine Tyranid War Veteran fascination I developed. A lot of that had to do with the art, I think. The art coming out for Tyranid War Veterans, and also the Chapter Master's Honor Guard for the Ultramarines, was just absolutely fantastic. And I think that anybody who didn't look at that art and think that was absolutely incredible and get themselves, you know, kind of awestruck and inspired and amazed all at the same time, I think would be lying. But back then for me, I was very much focused on things like my year 12 exams and stuff. So my time for the Tyranid War Veterans was a little bit less than what it would have otherwise been. And before I got a chance to launch into that in any substantive way, I went off and joined the army, of all things. So I went off to play my own science fiction, only in modern day, I guess, and blew a few things up. So that was pretty cool. The Tyranid War Veterans as a specialist group of Ultramarines made a lot of sense to me, having a specialized unit equipped to take on what was a really grave threat to the Imperium. And the way that it was structured and the way that it was outfitted as a more independent operating unit of Chaplain Cassius, that just resounded with me in a very particular way. You know, the Space Marines were always presented as the Imperium's finest warriors at the time. But there was no real way for them to ultra-specialize outside of things, at least back then, as Grey Knights. I know we're going off in a different direction because technically they're Grey Knights of their own chapter and have a different process of being inducted and all those sorts of things. So we're not going to delve into that. But, you know, they were the only super specialized unit from a Space Marine perspective that I can think of. And the Ultramarine Tyranid War Veterans just really jumped out at me as something which really appealed. Tyranids themselves, you know, on the opposite side of the fence, were really appealing at the time because I grew up on science fiction movies like Aliens, the franchise. I mean, who couldn't love Aliens and Predator and all that sort of stuff? And this concept that there is this Xenos threat, which is just so ridiculously difficult to beat. And, you know, these Xenos threats find their way onto things like spaceships, space hulks, and the various denizens of humanity, and, you know, the colonial marines and stuff like that. They come into this with a attitude that it's not really all that bad. You know, we'll be fine, and then all of a sudden everything turns to shit. I think that it's a nice kind of parallel to the 40K universe, because it's all fundamentally based around expansion and mankind doing amazing things, and the Aliens franchise certainly did that. I think with all discovery of new planets and all those pioneering efforts of humanity, but then Aliens kind of derailing that to an extent, and Predator being another complicating factor. If you've seen Alien versus Predator, then you'll know what I'm talking about. Terrible movie, don't ever see it, but if you have, then you'll know it's not fun for anyone. The other factor which kind of made Tyranids a very real and very gripping foe, I guess, for me from a theoretical perspective was the Zerg in StarCraft and the bugs in Starship Troopers. It all felt right at the time, given where I was and exposed to all this pop culture, for me to really think, well, the Xenos threat, like Tyranids, they're really the arch enemy, and the Ultramarines just happen to fit very well in line next to them. So the Ultramarine Tyranid War Vets obviously became a big focus. I don't think anybody could really talk about an anti-Xenos specialist unit without also considering the Orcs. Orcs and Tau also were a big focus of mine as well. I think any fantasy or even space opera universe that doesn't really consider Orcs in some way, shape or form just isn't doing the right job. I think that's maybe a product of the last few years of fantasy literature, and you know, even going back towards your Tolkien's and stuff. Orcs are just there. They're omnipresent. And so is the Imperium, to stomp them. And my friends at the same time, who were starting to build their own small 40K collections, were collecting Tau. And I quite liked the story of Tau emerging as a new technologically advanced and rapidly evolving threat that required a new way of fighting, and the Death Watch kind of fit right into that really well. Death Watch began to emerge at this very same time when the original Kill Team rules did. I remember them first coming out and me being really excited about the variability in the different loadouts in a Death Watch Kill Team and how cool it would be to model some of these things. And what immediately jumped out to me was that Death Watch, as they had emerged, were representative of a myriad of conversion projects. And I really wanted to make a standalone army of Death Watch immediately, as soon as I saw them, because I just knew how cool they would be. But at that time, like I said, I was jumping into a career in the military, so there wasn't any time for that. And after I was in the army, I'd sold my Ultramarines, and when I was at university studying commerce and then law, I dabbled in conversion projects, but almost all hobby was put on hiatus for a few years because it just wasn't possible to jump into it in any substantive way. And fast forward to September 2018, and I'd been following developments such as Eternal Crusade and Dawn of War and all those sorts of things, and gradually dipping my toe further and further back into hobby. And Kill Team really leapt out at me at that time. And I just thought, well, given I now have an established career in corporate governance and earning a good salary and finding myself with some time for hobby, Death Watch made good sense as an opportunity to both get into Kill Team with a box which is easy for you to start out with given the different options that they give you, but also to really bring my conversion skill and background working for clients and also apply that in a Kill Team setting. So lo and behold, come September 2018, I've got a Death Watch Kill Team box. I've got the Primaris Intercessor box, and it just all kind of started from there. And to jump out into Kill Team specifically, that was a big choice that I made because I just didn't like the way that the mainline 40K rules were going. But there'll be more on that particular reasoning process in the next part of this episode, which is starting out in Kill Team. So I'll take a quick break and then we'll come back to that. Welcome back, and now on to part two of this season one, episode one, starting out in Kill Team with the Death Watch. For me, starting out with the Death Watch in Kill Team was an opportunity to take advantage of a long-held interest in the Ordo Xenos and bring that interest in both the Death Watch and making very unique miniatures and bring that to tabletop in a smaller format, such as Kill Team, where if I decided after getting started that I wanted to branch out and do something else, I could. The 40K hobby over time was one that became a little bit unwieldy, even back when I was collecting my Ultramarines, because once you start getting a few large vehicles and walkers, and even now, especially with things like flyers, I imagine it's just so hard to transport. I always found myself carrying boxes and boxes of different miniatures in different ways, and Kill Team just gave me an opportunity to get a single large figure case and bring a whole heap of miniatures that would never be so many that you'd be overladen, I guess. And I also just thought that the rules in large-scale 40K just didn't seem to really resound with me. I remember watching some, I think it was Tabletop Tactics or something like that, and it was a 40K game of Imperial Guard or Astra Militarum and Chaos, which had a number of Brass Scorpions, I think it was, in a fairly closely set city fight kind of map. And there was a Stormlord or something like that in the Astra Militarum and a whole bunch of different las guns and things like that on the Astra Militarum side. And after one turn of shooting, basically the entirety of the Chaos side had been wiped off the table. And even the las guns seemed to be putting an enormous amount of hurt on large vehicles such as the Brass Scorpions or whatever they were. I don't remember exactly, but that to me didn't really strike me as 40K. It had become a bit dumbed down, I guess. So Kill Team being much more focused on the manoeuvring and the small-scale skirmish combat rather than standing in a gun line and shooting at one another, that came across to me as a far more genuine 40K experience that I get. Yeah, it operates on a small scale, but it gives me the kind of opportunity to put Space Marines or whatever model and their unique character traits to good use and really get very deep into a narrative about why we're there in the first place. So it was a really great opportunity to grab hold of that, I guess, and pour a whole heap of passion into a hobby which meant quite a lot to me. And let's be honest, who doesn't like the color black? The Death Watch in black with their different chapters was a great opportunity as well, just to see how I could enhance my freehand skill with different chapter logos and stuff like that. And I'm very proud that each of my Death Watch Marines are from different chapters and entirely unique individuals. So it's been a good opportunity to really flex that modeling muscle, I guess, and create something that won't exist anywhere else. And the way I went about designing my Death Watch was to start with an idea as to the aesthetic rather than putting a list together. And as such, my Death Watch started with my specialists, the gunners. And the main source of inspiration for my gunners was another hobbyist who is Russian. I've never met this person, of course, but there was a really amazing hobbyist, which was on, I think it was Tumblr or something like that, and I had simply started looking for Space Marine Heavy Bolter or something like that, and this guy had created some really amazing looking Iron Hand Devastators. And the way that he'd gone about doing this was grabbing Space Marine Centurions and using the large harnesses to represent the enhanced power armor that the Devastators would need to move around. And that looked really incredible to me because I wanted something which represented a Death Watch alpha team of sorts, in inverted commas. And the speed in which I theorized my Death Watch would be moving required the heavies, as they were, to be able to keep up. And the rules for your heavies in Kill Team allow for those models to move and shoot without suffering the Neg-1 modifier. So it made a lot of sense to design harnesses around those individuals which would enhance their capacity to maneuver on the battlefield. So started with those and then kind of expanded from there. And now I'm at a point where, at least from a gameplay perspective, I'm just adding my standard Marines, both for your Death Watch veteran variety and also for Intercessors. Intercessors haven't featured too widely in my lists, mostly because I don't think they're necessarily needed for Death Watch, given the different options that they have, but they do play a role here and there. And for a baseline Marine around 14 points with special issue ammunition, I feel like they can get the right amount of punch without requiring the second wound to do it. And accordingly, a lot of my miniatures are now based on the Primaris frame, but they are count as Death Watch veterans, just simply because I like the aesthetic of the current Intercessors, and I mix up the style a bit with the Death Watch backpacks. I think the Death Watch backpacks do represent something really special and unique about them. So all of my Intercessors have Death Watch backpacks, but otherwise they're more or less just the Intercessor parts that I convert to fit the right aesthetic. Beyond these standard Marines, there are a few other things which I want to work on, even that, you know, don't even have any role in Kill Team at all. And one of those is Hellblasters. I know Hellblasters unfortunately don't have any place because, strangely, Marines don't have an enormous amount of access to plasma, and you would think that Death Watch probably would, given the sort of threats that they match up against, but no, they don't. So I'm going to make them anyway, purely for kicks. And I'm also going to design some Marines based on the Gravis armor frame as well. And they're going to be veterans that are armed with storm shields. And I just want them, again, to count as standard veterans, but be Marines who look bulkier, look tougher, and more fierce. Yeah, they could also count as base Primaris, depending on how I kit them out. But the idea is to have a really strong, cohesive look to all my Marines, which is based on those Primaris frames, because I do think that's probably where the aesthetic of the Marines is going, notwithstanding that they're still baby Marines / firstborn, whatever you'd like to call them, and the new Primaris frame. So my backlog for all those involves painting all my reserve teams, which is a combination of more special weapons and veterans, finishing my Watchmaster and my Ancient that are coming along nicely, even though the Watchmaster's points makes him a little bit prohibitive, I guess. I don't really see him coming into too many games. But it'd be nice to use him here and there in friendlies if I do get that opportunity. And I've also got Terminators, a full squad, and full set all. Actually, that's not true. I've got 2 6-man squads of Reavers, and the Reavers are configured with half carbines and half heavy bolt pistols and combat knives, again, mostly for the aesthetic. The Reavers have limited use in Kill Team. They have limited use everywhere, really. They're just not that great at anything they set out to do. And I think that there are models in the Death Watch list especially that just do the job a hell of a lot better. And the extra wound might make them a little bit more survivable, but if you're maneuvering your Marines the right way and using your Marines the right way, then Reavers don't necessarily play a role. I think the main thing I'm looking for Reavers to do is act as scouts, dump shock grenades, and harass. And that's probably about it. For the cost that you pay for a Reaver, I'm not sure they're even worth it for that. But that's what I've currently got them for, and we'll test that out and see how it goes. There are some additional HQs which I'm putting together as well, which form my backlog, Terminator Librarians and a spate of Captains are coming along. The Terminator Librarian is an addition to my existing Librarian simply because the models are really cool. I haven't decided whether or not I want that Terminator Librarian to bring a combi weapon, given they're already so expensive and we pay the additional mounts for special issue ammunition, but we could. And I've also got some assassins, which I'm building purely for kicks. They might serve as different kinds of captains depending on how I feel like, but I mainly just wanted to have a bunch of Marines that are, again, very different to their Death Watch counterparts, but forming part of that same Astartes aesthetic. They're actually based on a combination of old Marines, the Primaris, and some entirely different foundations. My counts as Eversaur Assassin is a whole range of different parts all mashed together in a gloriously violent individual. And I will get back to him at some point. He has languished unpainted for quite a long time, or partially painted for quite some time, but I'll get to him. And there's also a Tech Marine, which I'm going to build alongside New Apothecary, even though the rules don't exist for the Tech Marine, especially in the Death Watchers 40K Codex somehow. I don't understand why, but somehow, given their real connection to Death Watch as a faction which relies heavily on advanced weapons and investigating or understanding those of the Xenos threat. And there's no real reason to not have a Tech Marine now, given that Ironfather, Pharos, and Tor Garrodon exist. And there'll be a combination of those parts going into my Tech Marine, which will be a Scythe of the Emperor once he's done. But those parts are currently coming from overseas while we're all locked down. So at some stage, I'll start on that Tech Marine when I actually have the parts to work with. Finally, there's a Chaplain Dreadnought that I bought and have painted up as my own chapter. That's mostly a side project to work on in a very back burner sort of way, particularly because I don't play mainline 40K at the moment. But if at some stage everything is painted up and I have maybe another vehicle or two, just so he doesn't last less than 15 seconds. There could be a role for him in the future as well. So that's kind of where I'm sitting with all of my Death Watch and the kind of design principles around them and the way I put them together. The whole backstory to my Death Watch that they were based on was one where there were a whole bunch of these alpha teams which were sent in to investigate some Necrons, and shit went wrong in a pretty egregious way. And a lot of the alpha teams didn't make it out of this tomb world. So there are two small alpha teams, which are the survivors, and they're a bunch of really angry boys. And the Death Watch that I play correspond with a more darker feel. They're less vainglorious and less sparkly and a little bit more dark and brooding in everything that they do. So the idea is they don't get along with others and they tend to be quite self-sufficient. So to that end, I try to kit out all of my Marines to the extent that I have any kind of weapon that I might need for any kind of engagement. So, for example, all my Terminators represent all the different war gear combinations for them, and there's going to be a different war gear combination for my librarians and a different war gear combination for my captains. Even though their choices in a kill team are pretty limited, you know, there'll be ways to kind of push that in the right direction. So at least from a librarian perspective, I'll make use of all those tools that are available to them, and at least try to get the most out of my Death Watch veterans and other HQ choices, because I think you're really missing out if you're not using all of the options to their fullest. And Elites does provide a good foundation to mix it up a bit, even though there are some choices which are perhaps absent, which would have been nice. And finally, the last things I really want to add into my Death Watch aesthetic are going to be, you know, more characters and some more Gravis armor Base Marines. So it should be interesting to see where that goes, even though it's unlikely that we'll ever see those models represented in a more substantive way. So that's the aesthetic and how that all came together. I'm going to take a quick break from here and I'll come back, talk about the current roster makeup for my Death Watch, some of the thinking behind that and the strategies I'm employing. So stick around and we'll be back in just a moment. Hey there, and welcome to part 3 of season 1, episode 1 of Slam Hammer, where we'll skip to the current Death Watch roster that I've got and some of the reasoning behind the choices there and then the intended application of these models to different strategy. Before I jump to that, I just want to reiterate that I'm very, very open to the feedback of listeners as to how this podcast can be improved. Being the first episode, there's going to be little things which aren't quite right or might be able to be tweaked here and there so that it matches not only your interest but also what you're hoping to get out of a Kill Team podcast. So if you are interested in seeing where the podcast could go and you want to possibly shift it in a direction which might correspond more with what you need, please feel free to touch base. There are a number of ways you can do that via the Anchor FM voice messaging link, rather. There is the direct messaging link on Instagram where you can find us at Crossblade Studios, and also just via email at crossbladestudios@gmail.com. So I'm very open to that feedback. Please feel free to shoot it through. Be as critical as you like, because the podcast can only evolve if there is critical feedback, and I'm very, very open and welcoming of that feedback. With critical feedback being a topic, we'll just skip to the current roster makeup and we'll take it from there. So the first entry on a Death Watch roster makeup, I feel, has to be the Primaris Librarian as a HQ choice. The reasoning for a Primaris Librarian is mainly for Psybolt and a reasonable combat efficiency with a Force Sword to do some high damage, particularly when coupled with a melee or a strength specialist sort of design. A strength 4 sword isn't going to do the greatest amount of damage, but when you couple that with some of the bonuses that you can get from the Psyker's innate powers, then I feel like that can probably do quite a decent amount of damage to your opponents. And I fully expect a Primaris Librarian to be singled out accordingly and just bullied a bit. And the multiple wounds that he brings to the table is going to be hugely helpful in soaking up that damage. if your single wound Death Watch veterans are copping it because of their relatively high points cost, then this boy is certainly going to cop it at his points cost. So the idea with a Primaris Librarian is to provide a really strong anchor for a lot of my other Marines to maneuver around, not necessarily into combat, but to amplify the attacks of other ranged units in a mobile sort of way. And in the continuing mobility theme, the Primaris Chaplain is one which draws on mobility, but in a different way. So you want to have access to aggressive strategies with an emphasis on melee. And Death Watch are really, really useful for jumping into melee, given the spate of different weapon options that they have. I think you'd be remiss in not giving yourself that opportunity to use, again, a relatively high-powered and quite resilient character to amplify the close combat attacks of your Death Watch. And he is a fairly obvious choice for me in that second HQ choice slot. These next two, they're a bit more optional. One of them represents a desire to model and have something different. And the third HQ choice I've got is a Terminator Librarian who's melee optimized with a Force Axe and Combi Flamer. So the reason for this is mostly for Hail Marys. So I appreciate that when you drop a Terminator Librarian into a group of highly elite operatives in Kill Team, it's unlikely that they're going to do a massive amount of damage because every weapon available will probably be turned on them, and that's fine. And in the matches I play, there tends to be a relatively high number of models with psychic capacity. So being able to make use of the psychic hood in a really scary way, I guess, is really good. And the idea behind this guy is to mostly deep strike, unleash with the combi weapons, and hopefully psyker everything to death. There's very little other reason to use him, I think. And the Force Axe should help him at least a little bit when this guy runs into close combat. And the AP on that, I felt, was a little bit more important than the strength bonus that you get from a Force Stave. And the reason for that is if I really want the strength bonus, then I have specialties which can play to that. And the Force Sword's already represented in the Primaris Librarian, so there isn't any real need to bring another one. The combi weapons, I think I might leave open with magnets to give him each option. The main thing I wanted to fix on him was the axe, just so there's a different kind of look to him. My Primaris Librarian has a spear, like their Nemesis Force weapon, so I do want something to have a very different look. And, yeah, he represents that opportunity. Finally, the last HQ choice, and one which should be interesting, is Eisenhorn. Eisenhorn is a very cheap Psyker choice for the Death Watch, and I just feel like it's useful to have something which is that cheap that you can put in a 200-point list if you ever need it, and be able to dump some cheap Psybolt on your opponents while the other Death Watch Marines do their best work. And if I wasn't going to include Eisenhorn in a 200-point list, or even in a campaign roster, I guess I would probably just interchange Eisenhorn with a Watch Sergeant, and the Watch Sergeant would probably have a Xenophase Blade and Storm Shield. And there are a few reasons that, you know, you probably would lean towards a Watch Sergeant with that combination rather than Eisenhorn, and that's mainly just because Storm Shields are fantastic, and Xenophase Blades, again, being strength 4, aren't going to be great against some of the high toughness creatures that you'll find in Kill Team, but it just makes a lot of sense to have something which can impact invulnerable saves, particularly for things like Eldar and demons. So that's kind of the idea for Eisenhorn. I have made my own counts as Eisenhorn, and I hope to use him at some point, but I don't think I'll end up seeing him in too many games either, simply because Commanders isn't great, but also because there's probably some more cost-effective units that you can take for the Death Watch, which kind of negate the whole Eisenhorn thing anyway. The other choices I've got, two Watch Sergeants with differing combi weapons that are available, one with Xenophase Blade and Power Sword. These are two very strong linchpins. Accordingly, they're both leader specialties. The idea for them is to plant themselves in between basically the toughest enemy unit that decides to wander nearby, and either give it a good plasma right in the chest or a Xenophase Blade in the face, combined with a melter gunshot. And if neither of those work, then there's going to be an Intercessor Sergeant with a bolt rifle and Power Fist in some lists that I bring that should be able to tie up something at least and pile some strength 8 attacks onto high toughness creatures. And that's really the strong leadership core of the Kill Team list, outside of characters, of course, which is designed to, again, be something of a linchpin for the entirety of the Kill Team to maneuver around, because even accounting for all the strengths of Space Marines, they're not going to be the best in combat, and they're not going to be the best in any kind of shooting scenario either. So it's going to be more important to me that there's a really strong core of leadership to act as a central hub. And as essential additions to those, we've got the two gunners. At the moment, I have just the one Infernus Heavy Bolt and Frag Cannon on the list, and they're the Sniper and Demolitions specialism, respectively. The Infernus Heavy Bolt is really the workhorse special weapon of the Death Watch, I feel, just because it's so versatile, and there hasn't been a single match for Death Watch that I've played where the Infernus Heavy Bolter hasn't performed really admirably. And putting the Flamer to good use, I feel, is probably the most important aspect of having an Infernus. Using the Heavy Bolter and the Hellfire rounds, like, that's fine, but against some of the higher numbers that you'll see in Astra Militarum lists and stuff like that, I just feel like putting a heavy flamer to good use is really important. And either being a heavy to be able to move really quickly around the map and not be impeded, but also have a sniper specialty there to make sure all your heavy bolter shots are landing is just so important to making sure you're getting the most out of that. Kind of secondary to that is the Deathwatch frag cannon. There are, of course, lists that have multiple of these frag cannons in them, and I appreciate why that is the case, but I don't really want to fill up my roster with frag cannons, because ultimately if you're playing an extended campaign and you lose a frag cannon, you can put a new one in. It doesn't really bother me. I do have a number of frag cannon models, but I just feel like for the purposes of the roster, it's just important to have one in there because you'd be silly not to, given it's probably one of the best weapons in the entire game system. If you disagree, let me know. But given it features so widely, like clearly it's there for a reason and it should be used. Probably one of the underperformers in my list, which will hopefully have some more opportunity to be tested in future games, is a veteran with a Stalker bolt gun. Where you've got a heavy weapon like an Infernus heavy bolter or a frag cannon, I don't see there being much use for putting sniper on the Stalker bolt gun in and of itself, particularly because Marines are typically pretty good shots anyway, and the Stalker bolt gun isn't ever going to be doing enough damage on its own to warrant the waste of the specialty. So I actually haven't used this guy as a sniper once, but it does make sense as the specialty that you would assign if it was given one, mostly because of the two shots. I feel like that's just such a better option for most games against all the different kinds of opponents that Deathwatch can come up against, rather than the stronger, bulkier, single-shot cousin, the Stalker Bolt Rifle. So that is kind of the last of the ranged units, which are designed to be either fairly static in the case of the Stalker Bolt Gun and try to put on some hurt at longer range, or, you know, making use of the Deathwatch heavy weapons to thin some of the enemy ranks. The more close combat-oriented sides of my Deathwatch are veterans with Thunder Hammers, that are the combat specialty, just to make use of the combat bonuses and extra attacks. I actually don't have a Black Shield in my list at all, but I am intending on building a Black Shield in the coming weeks. I've ordered some parts for that. He'll also be built with a Gravis Armor Foundation, but more on that through the Instagram profile, because it's been a bit of a project I've been keeping on the down low for a little while. So do keep up to date with the Instagram profile at Crossblade Studios to see how that evolves, because he will more than likely fit in place of something like an Eisenhorn or a Terminator Librarian if I was to switch up those choices, just because there are many reasons why you want to re-roll your advances. I just think the Black Shield is a good option for that, even though, you know, the things I'm seeing indicate that a Black Shield normally doesn't make it too close. But there's no reason to not take one purely for that option, I feel. And Zealots kind of tie in nicely with the Black Shield thing. I've got two Zealots, and the ones that I have configured are with a Storm Shield and Power Maul. I do feel like the extra strength is really, really helpful, and they are likely to be a bit of a target for your MEQs, simply because of the invulnerable saves, and they'll probably absorb a lot of hate from opponents. So the idea is to have them as quite strong cores where Thunderhammer might not be the best choice. And purely because I really wanted to make an apothecary If I don't use this guy as a fortitude spec captain, I've got an apothecary with a bulk gun and power sword in the list that has the medic specialization. I don't ever feel like a fortitude spec captain or a medic are ever going to do, again, an enormous amount in game, but I do feel like that's appropriate, particularly medic for an apothecary. So I do have one of those, and again, you know, his role is just to be a bit of a workhorse and make sure he gets in the way of anything that looks a bit too scary. There's a Reaver in my list that has a bolt carbine and is optimized to be a scout. And as I was mentioning earlier, I just have a Reaver in there at the moment to test with the dumping of shock grenades and interfere with the readying of opposing models when it comes to employing melee strategies, because I feel like being able to interfere with things like Overwatch is probably going to make something like your Vanguard veterans a lot more terrifying if there's a chance that they're just not going to be able to ready themselves and fire back. So that's where the Reaver plays into it. Reavers are really hard to justify, so it is likely that the Reaver will just be taken out altogether. And he'll be replaced with a Vanguard veteran with twin lightning claws or something like that, simply because they're cheaper, if I recall correctly, and they're also better than the Reaver in every way because of the jump pack. So who wouldn't want one of those? A common core for a lot of Space Marine armies is going to be the Intercessor with an Auspex and Stalker bolt rifle or a bolt rifle, and I've got one of those too to really amplify the sniper or demolitions spec heavy weapons. And with the Auspex and comm specialty, they're obvious bonuses to hit which come out of that, and that's kind of what I'm hoping to optimize him for, and he should be a strong core for that. The veterans that I have, I've got two of those in my list, both with shotguns, and that's to play to melee specialized lists. And I've always found the Death Watch shotgun ammunition to be very useful. And because some of those forms of ammunition are able to negate the various ways in which you're either disadvantages the model when you've taken wounds, or negates the strengths at least of your opponents. I feel like it's important to have at least two of those to give yourself some flexibility in your approach. And then there's going to be some standard backline objective grabbers, and I have a bunch of veterans just with standard bolt guns in there. And as I was mentioning later on, as I was mentioning earlier on, there are some other models which I'm working on. I acknowledge that without veterans with combi weapons en masse, they're not making the full use of the Death Watch armory, and there is certainly a intention to make sure that they get appropriate amounts of playtime. So there is intention to expand and flex around those lists, and combi weapons play a strong role in that. So there'll be more time for those lists to evolve as time goes on, but that's kind of the current thinking around the roster, which I will bring to my tournament games. But if there is feedback you have specifically on how it's made up, then please feel free to dump that in via the communications channels, the voice message link on the profile, via email, or via the Instagram profile. I'll obviously look forward to having that list critiqued a little bit. The strategies which these Death Watch normally employ is highly fluid, as you probably would have deduced from my choice of different HQs. They're designed to emphasize different ways of fighting. The changes in White Dwarf to Death Watch in mainline 40K, they're probably a bit new to be given a full focus in this podcast. So Death Watch in mainline 40K, I feel, might be a more appropriate topic for an established podcast and people who are into that side of the hobby a bit more. than I am. However, the changes in White Dwarf merely bring Death Watch in line with their broader Adeptus Astartes cousins and brothers. And I feel like that's probably all that needs to be said. There are still some shortfalls in the Death Watch list for mainline 40K. I think that if mainline 40K Death Watch had things like Tech Marines and Power of the Machine Spirit on the Black Stars and some more flexibility in the list, so they could take things like the Vanguard Marines, or at least a subsection of the Vanguard Marines, to kind of emphasize the spec opsy nature of the Death Watch and the infiltration element of what they do. I feel like that would be a great way to give them a bit more punch for what they are, particularly because this emphasis on the Primaris models that's in the current Codex does mean that you're probably not getting as much out of the list that you can get from something like the old Iron Hands, at least. I know that's now been changed a little bit, so you can't just dreadnought your way to victory, but there are certainly some benefits to taking the normal Space Marine lists and leveraging the hell out of the different strategies which they can use and the broader range of models they can use. And I just feel like that's probably a better conversation for another podcast, or even this one, at a different time. My roster and the method does center around using HQs and leaders as linchpins and really strong hubs, and usually would include a heavy, but there will be roles for your standard sort of intercessor with Stalker Bolt rifles, or even the Astartes grenade launcher, which I haven't got in my roster, but I have got a Model 4. So having some strong linchpins, a bit of a red shirt or new guy, and a workhorse. So the idea behind a red shirt or a workhorse is to be the ones to soak up the damage. With a lot of their missions in Kill Team, Death Watch need to make up for small numbers. So having someone who's kind of that sacrificial lamb, I feel, is really important. And for me, the workhorses in things like shotgun armed Marines is really important. So they're able to stand in the way of an approaching threat, or be able to stand on top of an objective if there is an objective-based mission, and tie up the opponent in a way which the other members of the Death Watch can either use their ammunition or their special tactics to engage with them in a variety of ways to either thin their numbers or support the workhorse or new guy in melee. And the addition of a Vanguard Marine with Twin Lightning Claws is certainly intended to emphasize and improve those melee aspects of the roster a lot more. Right now, given there is some combat capacity, but it is restrained. There is an obvious sort of alignment to the more shooty side rather than the melee side of the Death Watch. But there'll be more opportunities to employ those melee strategies when it comes to the point where I've got a Terminator Librarian, for example, or a Vanguard Marine or two that can just use speed as their best weapon to tie up different parts of an enemy's list, and hopefully not just get murdered in turn one, because they tend to either be hugely expensive in the case of a Terminator Librarian, or be something which really makes up for another deficit in quite a significant way in the case of the Vanguard Veteran. So we'll see how that plays out particularly when coronavirus hopefully goes away and we can play a few more matches. And my 2B Tech Marine will come to these lists as a shooting specialization captain. And I think that will give me a few different ways to optimize a captain side of the list rather than a librarian chaplain sort of emphasis in the HQs. Because I think Death Watch really shine with their shooting, and having a character which both looks the part and is able to emphasize those aspects of what the Death Watch do in Kill Team is going to be really valuable. So please, by all means, do tell me what you think of the list and the roster. If you configure your rosters in a different way, please feel free to debate out the strengths and weaknesses of the roster and the different tactics for Death Watch in Kill Team. I really love to have conversations around how you can get the most out of your units. Or do you use a different Kill Team faction which maybe negates the entirety of the strategies here or has a different way of countering some of the strategies here? I'd love to hear more about what you think, both about the rosters and how this kind of roster would play. And I'd also just love to hear from you in general as to what you thought of episode one of season one of Slamhammer. So that brings us to the end of season one, episode one of Slamhammer. Please do make sure that you keep in touch with us via anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on Instagram at Crossblade Studios. There will be a whole heap of content going up in season one, and I'll be working on a heap of projects for Crossblade Studios clients on Instagram. So follow us everywhere you can. Be sure to relay your feedback. Jump in, say hi when you can if you're ever on the Crossblade Studios profile, and we will catch you in the next episode. Thank you very much, and see you later.